Microplastics are fragments of any type of plastic less than 5 millimeters in length. Think of larger pieces of plastic that are broken apart, or rosin pellets for plastic manufacturing, or those microbeads in health and beauty products. These tiny particles easily pass through water filtration systems, and they end up in our ecosystem, a potential threat to aquatic life. The University of Tennessee and TVA are studying the impact of microplastics by examining fish gathered from Tennessee's watershed. TVA biologists and university students collected these samples of freshwater fish dating back to 1965, now preserved as part of a collection at UT Knoxville. The study aims to determine when the microplastics entered the watershed to measure any effects on the freshwater fish. Dr. Andreas Fath, a water chemist at Furtwangen University in Germany, is working with the study team. A few years ago, he strapped a pollution sensor to his wetsuit and swam the entire 652 miles of the Tennessee River. I spoke with him and Dr. Ben Keck, director and curator of the Ichthyological Collection at UT Knoxville.
Dr. Fath, Dr. Keck, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for inviting us.
Tell us more about microplastics in the Tennessee River.
Well, in comparison to the Rhine, which I analyzed and I swam 2014, the numbers which the team found from the University of Savoni and University of Furtwangen was tremendous in comparison to the Rhine, 18,000 particles per cubic meter. I didn't expect that high number, to be honest.
And we should point out to people that the Rhine is an industrialized area.
Of course, it's industrialized, not like the Tennessee River, which is, you can swim without so much traffic for leisure. But the Rhine, it's a bit complicated. You need a license to do that.
Last summer, you swam the Tennessee River, 652 miles from Knoxville, Tennessee, to Paducah, Kentucky. And you and your team analyzed samples, three samples of the 12 that you collected, and you found close to 18,000 microplastic particles per cubic meter of water in the Tennessee River. How did you conduct this swim and this analysis?
Well, I swam the whole track, but we took samples, of course, and I placed a plastic membrane on my leg as a sampler. So let's say I was the big sturgeon swimming the Tennessee River, and everything which is in there, microplastics and other stuff, could adhere on this sampling device. And later on, we could extract everything which this sampler collected. And then we had an idea about the trace compounds which you found in there beside the microplastic. You should know that microplastic you find everywhere in our surrounding, in the kitchen, in the air outside, from the friction of the wheels, everything. So we have a lot of intake, like 5 grams per week. This was analyzed, but we release the microplastic again. But the problem with microplastic with this high amount is that the microplastic particle behaves like a magnet. And this magnet adheres a lot of all these chemicals we found also. And these chemicals, they adhere on my passive sampling device, which is nothing else than a membrane, a microstructured plastic membrane. So here you can see that organic pollutants, they adhere on this microplastic particles. And then this could be incorporated by aquatic life, and it ends up in our oceans. And 75% of all inhabitants on the world, they take their proteins out of aquatic life.
Not only in freshwater oceans, but also in the Tennessee River, which you swam and you and your team analyzed. These microplastics, these tiny pieces of various types of plastic, less than 5 millimeters long, as you've been explaining, they've been accumulating in freshwater and in the world's oceans. Dr. Keck, that brings us to you, because the swim and the analysis by Dr. Fath and his colleagues, you're involved in that. And what they have found, you're hoping to use to unlock some more knowledge about what's in the river and some solutions to what's in the river.
Absolutely. And so when I saw this study, it really shocked me, because normally when we think about pollutants in these river systems, we often think about these chemicals. And in the Tennessee River, we're particularly concerned about improving water quality. We've seen improving water quality. We've seen species diversity stop declining rapidly. And we're doing reintroduction efforts like the Little Pigeon River. Microplastics were not really on our radar. And when I saw the study, just, you know, a light bulb went off on my head, like, we need to figure this out and find, are microplastics in these fishes first off? Are they still ingesting them? And certainly they are. And as Dr. Pfaff pointed out, they generally pass through the body system relatively quickly, but they could be these delivery mechanisms for these other pollutants. The other big question we had is, are the microplastics only concentrated in the intestines, or are they also concentrated in other places? And the limited amount of data that we have so far from the upper portion of the Tennessee River is that a lot of the fibers that we see, mostly from probably clothing that gets washed as people wash clothes and then through our system that aren't filtered out, tend to attach to gills. And so we're finding a lot of microplastics in the gills, and that's something that we didn't really expect. And this is important and concerning because gills are how fishes respire, right? That's how they breathe. And it's a very thin membrane, and pollutants can probably very easily go across this membrane. Plus, you can imagine that if you shoved all these microplastics down in your lungs, you would probably not feel great about breathing, right? That would cause a lot of problems. And it probably causes a lot of problems with fishes. And so right now, we're just trying to document the patterns of microplastics and where they're concentrated in these fishes and see if there's any land use associated with that. Then we can start asking questions about how do we prevent microplastics or whether or not we should really be concerned with it. I mean, I'm guessing that we will, but we've always got to, you know, accept the possibility that this may not be that large of a concern. But it's striking so far. We've had specimens from Abrams Creek up in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park from 1978 and 1980s that have plenty of microplastics in them. And so this is definitely not a recent concern or a recent event. This is something that spans at least 50 years.
And you're relying on more than just the swim and the research and the analysis done by Dr. Pfaff. You at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville are partnering with TVA on this one-of-a-kind study, and you're drawing on samples collected by TVA dating back to 1965.
Correct. And so the ichthyological collection here at the University of Tennessee was started by David Etnauer, who was one of the authors on Fishes of Tennessee, also the person that described the snail darter of snail darter fame. And he started here in 1965, started sampling fishes. At that point, it was probably estimated that there were maybe 60 or 70 species of described fishes in Tennessee, freshwater fishes. And at this point, we're well over 350 species, and that's native fishes to our waters here in Tennessee. Since 1965 to now, we've collaborated with lots of different agencies, but TVA is definitely one that we've collaborated a lot with since the 1970s. And so we have a lot of samples from TVA sampling events and research. They're housed here. They're housed because we think that these specimens are good for identifying new species, for identifying which types of fish communities were in these localities at that time. We use these specimens to identify any morphological problems. Like, fishes have these really cool things called lateral lines, which basically are a sensory system so that they can sense things. And one of the big questions people had recently was whether or not pollution had an impact on the embryonic development and larval development of those lateral lines, which is something that we wouldn't be able to do if we didn't have these samples from a long time ago. And the same thing with the microplastics. These are basically little time capsules where we can go back and look and see, was that fish in 1965 ingesting any microplastics? Then at the same locality in 1980, also ingesting microplastics. Were they the same ones? Were they different? And were the concentrations different? And so that's what these natural history museums really are, not just a library of going and finding stuff to read, but also going and finding stuff we never knew how to ask.
What are some of the next questions that each of you has when it comes to this research, when it comes to this question of microplastics in the water?
If you find 80,000 particles in the river, so that arises several questions. First question is, where does these particles come from? Second question, where do they end up, the aquatic life? Which impact that these particles have on the health? And if you have a look, have to have a look at the whole types of microplastics. They have different types with different densities. So of course, on top of the surface of the river, we find the lighter particles like polypropylene, polyethylene, which comes from packaging. And the fish of aquatic life, which lives in this area, they maybe make an uptake of these particles. But if you go further down into the sediments, you find maybe PVC or polyamide or heavier plastics. And maybe you find bottom feeders over there. So what does the bottom feeder intake? Is it different from other fishes, from a filter feeder or from a predator? So which type of plastic ends up in which animal? And of course, in all these plastics, we find not only the polymer, we find additives, let's say softeners like the phthalates, which are endocrine disruptors. So, and we have other UV stabilizers, pigments, a lot of additives added to the plastic. This will be extracted in fish bodies because the circumstances are different. It's not only more water, it's enzymes, another pH, other temperatures. So this could cause desorption processes so that all the intake of substances coming from the microplastic would end up in the fat of the aquatic life, which at the end enters our food chain. So there are a lot of questions arising from this microplastic distribution in the water stream.
Dr. Keck?
We're definitely looking at the different, you know, what things eat, because we expect that there will be different things. And again, when we have so many different species in any given stream, they've partitioned every little spot of that stream up. And so you get one minnow that feeds in the middle of the water column, one that feeds it right at the top. And so by knowing the ecology of those things, we can ask those questions. We know how to split up the analyses. One of the other big things that we're looking at and starting to try to figure out is whether or not we see differences month by month. And so this is a question that hasn't really been asked yet, is if we go out and sample the same species, if we pick four that eat different things, sample them every month and extract those microplastics from them, are we going to see a difference from January to June? My hypothesis, and this is my pet hypothesis, is that in the wintertime, people wash more clothes, they wear more clothes, and so there might be more fibers moving into the water body. I have no clue, but you know, that's my pet hypothesis, and we're going to try to figure that out. So even on shorter time scales, besides looking back 50 and 60 and 70 years, we're also interested in what happens on kind of a regular cycle. That could be worrying in the fact that during early spring, when all of our freshwater fishes are spawning, well, most of our freshwater fishes are spawning and the larval fishes are coming up in the water column, if there's a pulse of microplastics during that time, then that could have a bigger effect on those larval fishes. And that's what we're concerned with largely from the standpoint of biodiversity is, with these microplastics, are we seeing impacts on recruitment, and not necessarily just one species, but focusing on one part of the life history of these things?
And where can people go online, Dr. Keck, to keep up on this research in the Tennessee River?
We're working on trying to get everything updated on our website for the fish collection. Unfortunately, it's a bit out of date right now. And so we're still working on getting that done. Unfortunately, because of COVID, a lot of the research that we're doing was pushed back by about 7 months. And so I've incorporated a whole lot of undergraduates here at University of Tennessee that are working on extracting these microplastics and each kind of asking their own question. And unfortunately, they weren't allowed to be in the lab for about 6.5 months. And so we've just gotten back into it and we're just starting to get these results. The goal is that during the fall, we'll be able to start presenting these results at regional meetings and then also try to get things published and out there. And so we won't necessarily release the results of our analyses on a website before it's published in an article.
All right. Dr. Keck, Dr. Fath, thanks so much.
Thanks to you.
Thanks for having us.